So it's our pleasure to welcome for the first time to Many Rivers Books and Tea our author for the evening, Karen Mitchell, with her book, Woman Without a Name, right here, as you see. Karen Mitchell was living in a poor Clare monastery when she had a non-ordinary experience of divine origin and cosmic earthly comprehensiveness of feminine energy. So she'll be talking about that, as well as this novel, which, as I understand it, explores these topics in that form. So welcome so much.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming to Many Rivers Books and Tea tonight.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. This is a kind of a small, nice, intimate group. Maybe what to start with, if you could just say your name and just say something about why you're here tonight. What do you hear tonight? So who would like to start? Would you like to start?
My name is Anne, and I attend most of the talks at Many Rivers.
Okay. Welcome.
I am Barbara, and I'm a good friend of Karen's, and I was in the monastery with Karen for many years. And we became acquainted in the monastery, but we became friends consequently after we both left and pursued our own lives. And Karen went on to her studies and becoming a clinical psychologist and working with people. And I pursued a very different path. I became a caretaker, and I was very interested in nursing and taking care of the body and the spirit of people. So Karen and I, in many ways, have connected over the years, and we've always been very close friends, and so we are on our journey together. We enjoy each other's company a lot. So, okay.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm glad I'm here.
And my name is Betty, and I do come to most of the programs here, and I'm the mother of one of the proprietors and the mother-in-law of the other.
Okay. Wow.
I have a big interest. But your program, I found the idea of your program especially interesting.
Okay.
Because feminine energy is
okay. Thank you.
I'm also kind of a Many Rivers Thursday night regular.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm very interested in the different ways of approaching the understanding of a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right about what you were doing. I found quite interesting the fact that you had gone through the monastic experience,
mm-hmm.
and what you had learned and your concepts of feminine energy. I thought was quite interesting. So
okay.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you have.
Oh, great. Thank you. And your name again?
Mary.
Mary.
Sure.
Mary. Okay.
Hi, I'm Carl.
Uh-huh.
And I have very little to go on because I just scanned the blurb and the I'm coming.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because if you have something that's interesting enough to the folks here to sign you up for Thursday night, then
okay.
Most often.
So that's the filter. That's the test.
No. I'm Lynn, and the what drew me here were the words healing and feminine.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, my name is Kathleen, and I am very interested in the non-dual states of awareness, since I
mm-hmm.
have also experienced that, and also the feminine energy, and also lately just really feeling like I want to support women in their expression of anything to do with the feminine.
Well, so, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm Jim, and I'm one of the founders of Many Rivers. I'm interested in your background because I was a monastic for Buddhist monastic.
Oh, okay, Buddhist
for,
monastic.
For 6 years.
Uh-huh. You're still a brother.
Yeah.
And
say something about who you are, why you're here.
Oh, yeah. Your name and just why you're here.
My name is Michael, and I'm still in the process of arriving on the planet. I just want to learn everything I can to make that arrival as complete.
Okay. Yeah. Arriving here is a big thing. Yes, and being all here, yes. It's a journey.
Well, I'm in camera. Looking over the offerings and just the word spirituality and feminine,
mm-hmm.
and the journey that you described just a little bit in the blurb filled me. So
okay.
I called my friend to say she wanted to come.
And you're
My name's Jerry, and my friend Tam is crazy, but I occasionally come to talks here, and yours sounded really interesting. I want to hear about your experiences with the monastery, and also just how you interpret that and through the feminine.
Okay. Okay. So what I'll begin with then is a reading. And I actually took that non-ordinary experience I had in the monastery and I wove it into the book. And so I'm just going to read it and then I'll comment later. So one morning, so this is one of the characters, one of the main characters, who's an elderly woman at this time. And she's telling her story. One morning, I had been in this village for about 15 years. I remember sitting down because I was tired from cleaning. I was watching a woodlouse scurrying under the door when my attention was completely captivated by something that seemed to be passing by me above my head. The strange thing was, I didn't see anything, nothing at all, but whatever it was had my full attention. I've often wondered how I could see nothing, but that's what happened. Then a word was given to me, but it didn't come with any thoughts or pictures. The word was woman. I still couldn't see anything, and I had no idea who this woman was or who had given me that word. But I loved her utterly. I could have died thousands and thousands of times for her, and all that dying would have cost me nothing, absolutely nothing. My love for John couldn't compare. I can't express how happy I was. If the world felt what I felt then, it would be a different place. Over the years, I have thought about that love. It wasn't like ordinary love. Here we see something or someone we admire, and then we love them. Love comes after the seeing, but this love was different. It didn't come after seeing, it was the seeing. How can I explain the difference? Seeing and loving were one thing. I understood that time usually splits them up. Even if it's a matter of a very small amount of time, things get separated. But I was somewhere without time, and I knew that loving and seeing were one thing, and there is no word for it. And that experience was part of the mystery of the woman, the one who had no name and whom I saw without seeing. So you could say I had this experience in my mid-20s, and that experience was the seed of this book. So I've kind of been unfolding that experience, and I'm still unfolding that experience, and I probably will be, for time to come. So, and this book is an exploration trying to answer that question, well, who was this woman? What is this reality? Because at the time when I heard that word, it was like something that comprehended everything. So it's very awkward. It's so awkward to talk about because you can't even name it. What am I talking about? So the closest little phrase to it is like the sacred feminine. But what do I mean by that? It's really hard to pin down because it's a spiritual being, a spiritual being, but it's a communion of spiritual beings. It's a way of being that is part of all of us, women and men. It is certain qualities, and I mean all that is comprehended by that word woman, by the sacred feminine. So, and for me, what I found is that access to this realm is really, it's the inner realm, it's the realm of the soul, and it's, we access it by simply turning inward. We begin that journey into the realm of the sacred feminine by simply turning inward. And I'm thinking, you know, today we feel such a sense of power because with a little click, we're in cyberspace, you know, with so much information and all that at our fingertips. But we don't even have to click to enter into the inner world, to enter into the world of the soul, to enter into the world of the sacred feminine. And I think that it's very simple, but it's very difficult to do. And I think especially difficult for us, kind of contemporary people, Americans. And I went into a monastery at 17, and it was not an easy thing. In fact, there were several nuns who didn't think that I should go past the first year because it's a very difficult life, the monastic life. Silence doesn't come easy to us modern people. Stillness doesn't come easy. There was a measure of solitude, even though we lived in community, the silence itself and the way of life, you also had this feeling of being alone. And all that was very challenging. What we call the contemplative disciplines of silence, stillness, quiet, listening, openness, receptivity, those are all ways of sort of entering into this inner realm, the realm of the soul, which is, in my mind, in my view, the realm of the sacred feminine. Okay. Now I think that there is a particular feminine. Since I've left the monastery, I've become a licensed clinical social worker, working in a public mental health system with severely mentally ill, with emotionally disturbed, quote unquote, kids that are labeled emotionally disturbed. So I was working full time for about 13 years, and then I went down to part time so I could write and do other things. But I am still in the field. So obviously having an interest in emotional healing. And there is a real way of entering into the healing process. I think the healing process is, again, contacting or entering the sacred feminine, the true healing process. It's interesting today, I'm seeing like a shift in my public mental health system. It's really interesting what's happening, because on the one side, there's these little currents that allow for things like mindfulness in healing, using mindfulness to help people. But there's also kind of moving towards a mechanistic way of looking at healing, where we're talking about setting goals, we're talking about behavior management, we're talking about anger management, aggression replacement therapy, all this kind of stuff. And there is a danger, I think, with some of this, the latter stuff, in that we end up being afraid of emotional experience. Like if we're afraid, if we're angry, to talk about ways that we can kind of overcome our anger or our fear, sometimes there's a little bit of a risk of not honoring or seeing exactly what emotional experience is, which I think is a gift. So I want to read you something that kind of expresses a passage that expresses kind of a more of a sacred feminine, more of a feminine approach to healing and to emotional experience. So let's see here. That's not that. This one. So this woman, this young woman, who was also, she's a main character. Her name is Lucia. She has experienced a kind of a horrible, where she had a miscarriage after being beaten. Okay. So, needless to say, she's been going through a lot of trauma. So one morning, Lucia noticed that the pain in her head and shoulder had eased. And after 3 days of feeling better physically and emotionally, she thought the worst might be over. However, her reprieve did not last. One afternoon, as she was resting, she felt a slight touch of terror. She did not think much of it, but for the next several days, the moments of terror multiplied and lengthened. Lucia could not figure out what was causing them and hoped they would pass. She said nothing about it to Aaron or her other loved ones, for they had been heartened by her recent progress. One evening, while she was having dinner, her food suddenly became tasteless. She looked at Aaron and her godparents, trying to follow their conversation, but they seemed thousands of miles away. The terror returned. She put down her fork, said she needed some air, and left the table. She went and stood outside under a tree near Simon's workshop, and when Aaron came to check on her, she sent him back inside, saying she was fine. When he left, though Lucia's heart sank, she knew there was nothing he could have done or said that would have comforted her. She stood there alone, while the emptiness eclipsed everything. All she knew and loved and all she had thought and experienced. It was as if there had never been anything but this emptiness, nor would there ever be. After several days and nights of this, Lucia decided if she wasn't to go mad or worse, she needed a long, deep sleep at the very least. She was about to ask Catherine for something that would induce it, when she noticed something nudging her inside. She was gently being pushed to do something. As she was trying to sense what it was, Lucia heard these words, "Take in the emptiness. Eat and drink it. This is also me." Lucia was shocked. She would not have been able to accept those words if she had not simultaneously had the recognition they were coming from a mind much greater than her own. And besides, the words were not like an ordinary suggestion. They communicated the near completion of a tremendous deed, a deed that awaited only her complete assent to be fully accomplished. Lucia did assent and immediately was able to do exactly what the words had said, although she would find it impossible to describe how she could do it to anyone. And when she had taken in the emptiness, she saw how grossly she had previously misinterpreted it, for the emptiness seemed now a space, and the space a womb, and the womb held everything. It held little Sophie and all of little Sophie's possibilities. It was not a womb that held anything static or confined. It was a womb that nourished freedom and the power to move about in ways she had not imagined previously. This freedom and power seemed the very taste of the divine. Lucia could hardly believe the gift that had been given her. She remembered what Aaron had said about little Sophia leaving for her sake, and she wept. So, sharing a personal experience, some of you are a little interested in the, what my personal experience of the monastery was, mm-hmm. and kind of relating this to emotional healing. About, I had been in the monastery about 5 years, maybe six, and all of a sudden I just felt this tremendous energy, like wanting to come up, and I didn't know what that energy was about. That was, there's a nice little fly around here keeping me company, but there was, I didn't know what this energy was about. It was very frightening, it just seemed like it was huge. And so I went into the head, trying to figure out, trying to analyze, trying to reflect, trying to reason, and what this could possibly be, trying to get myself a little less scared of it. And that effort became so intense as the pressure of the energy, that I actually just kind of was going around with a buzzing sort of headache all the time. And after a while, it just was totally physically exhausting. And it brought me to a point, I wouldn't say of being suicidal, but of, like, have you heard the word catatonia? Just kind of literally completely checking out. So it kind of brought me to that edge, that tension and that pain and that all that. And then at one point, my physical body just sort of gave out, and I was sitting and I couldn't get up. So the sisters were very kind, and I got taken off all my duties, and I didn't have to do the regular life for a while, for a couple of weeks. So just to let my body recover. And I remember feeling fairly peaceful during this time. And then after a couple of weeks, I felt like I could go back to the life, and I thought, okay, maybe it's over. I was really thankful. Maybe this is over. Maybe the peace is a sign that it's over. But shortly, just a couple of days afterwards, I started feeling that energy again. And I go, oh no, I don't know if I can go through this again. And then it was kind of like I heard a voice saying, if God is everything, this too is God. So what are you afraid of? And it just kind of seemed to come from a really deep place inside of me, and I trusted those words. And I landed up again doing the kind of a feminine thing, just in terms of surrendering. So not trying to get on top of it, not trying to figure it out, just surrendering. And that was immediately, I got that sense that was the thing to do. And what happened shortly thereafter is I started grieving. And I'm not, some things I know, like I, what I was grieving for. Some things maybe relate, I know, related to childhood. But then my grief seemed to become, take in a little bit more than just myself. And I didn't know exactly what I was grieving for or who I was grieving for. But this grief went on for probably a couple of weeks, a few weeks. And then what I found myself is kind of like just kind of being carried away, you know, almost like literally like rapturous. And it's not like the grief kind of like changed to the it was like this wave that first started with grief and just kind of letting that wash through and flow through, kind of surrendering to that energy. And then it was sort of revealed itself as something else. Okay, so that was such a huge, I mean, that was one of the huge things I know I went into the monastic life to learn. So about around year 5, I knew I wasn't going to stay there. That wasn't going to be my life path, but I knew it wasn't time to leave, because if I had left, something I had to learn was going to take a lot more time. And I realize now that that was one of the things I was meant to learn. And that has taken away, that experience has taken away my fear of emotional experience. And I'm very kind of like tuned in to when I'm resisting emotion or emotional experience. So, because, again, I think for that sacred feminine, that feminine wisdom says nothing, you don't have to resist anything. Nothing has to be fought. Nothing has to be fought. It has to be attended to. Okay? You have to bring your awareness to it. And one of the things I've discovered, I had a similar experience of loneliness in the monastery after this experience. It was very intense loneliness. And I had learned from that. So I just allowed the loneliness to take up as much space in my awareness as it wanted to. And then it transformed into this sense of absolute oneness with everything. And so I think that today, in today's world, I see, even in mental health, which is supposed to be about healing, I see kind of like the invasion of some fear of emotional experience. Because we're not in control then, are we? We're not in control, and we didn't decide to, you know, be angry or lonely or sad or whatever. We don't decide that, and we don't know where it came from, where it's going to end or whatever. So there is this somewhat of a fear. Our ego is so afraid because our ego likes to be in control and in charge and know what's going on, comprehend things. But intense emotional experience, that's not the case. So. But I've learned is not something to be afraid of. It is really the realm of the soul sort of breaking into this plane, you could say. And it's something that is in the nature of an invitation. So, but anyway, I want to share, let's see. I want to share another passage with, again, similar to working with emotion is similar to working with desire. I think unfulfilled desire can also cause us great pain and distress, right? Kind of longing for something that is doesn't seem to be within reach. Desire for something that's kind of gone unfulfilled. The same thing in true desire in terms of emotional experience. So I just want to read this passage, a shorter passage. So this little girl is fearing that the loss of her elder, this older woman who has adopted her. So she says, I don't want you to die. I don't want you to lie in the ground like Angela. Lucia's hands revolved into fists. She was white and shaking. Sophia limped toward her, took Lucia's hands, and led her across the meadow. Sophia did not let go of her until they reached the river. They sat under a willow tree where, at Sophia's suggestion, they took off their shoes and dug their toes in the grass. Lucia put her arm through her mother's, and together they inhaled the calming fragrance of the river, as they had often done. I don't want you to leave me, Mom. I know. Why did Angela have to die? Why did Father Lawrence's mother die? If you die, I will be all alone, Lucia sobbed. You're forgetting you have Father Lawrence and Jeremiah, and there's Catherine and Simon. You wouldn't be alone. Many people care about you and love you very much. And remember what Father Lawrence said, I will still be with you, even though you won't be able to see me anymore. But I want to see you. I'll be so lonely if I can't see you. Lucia grabbed Sophia tightly. When Sophia turned around to embrace her, she saw Jeremiah standing a little way off. She motioned to him with an inclination of her head. How are you two? I heard someone shouting. That was me, Lucia said, wiping her nose. Do you miss Angela? I was thinking about Mom dying. You don't ever want to lose her, is that it? Lucia struggled to speak. She can't die. I don't want her to die either. I know when she does, I'll feel more alone in this world. You will? Of course. What will you do? Lucia asked. Hasn't anyone told you the big secret? What big secret? Jeremiah sat on the ground at Lucia's feet. The secret about desire, about its power, if you name it and then release it. Are you sure no one has mentioned it? Lucia shook her head. Jeremiah picked up a stick. This stick is desire. Some people hold their desires very close to them, but never give them a name. Jeremiah grabbed the stick tightly with both hands and held it to his chest. We have to name our desires, and then we have to release them. Releasing them is harder than naming them, but we need to learn to do that too. Jeremiah held the stick out in front of him. Gazing at it, he said, I want to be with Sophia forever. He kissed the stick and then tossed it into the river and watched as it was carried downstream. The river is the stream of longing that runs through everything. Where is that stick going? Who knows? Maybe all the way to the sea, for the sea draws all the rivers to itself. If you name your desire and then release it into the stream of longing, what a great journey your desire will make. I want Mom to stay with me forever, just like you do. Jeremiah gave her a stick. You know what to do. Lucia looked at Sophia, who nodded encouragement. She took the stick. I want to be with my mother forever. She kissed the stick, threw it with all her strength into the river, and then walked alongside the flowing water, keeping her eye on the stick. When Sophia called her back, she returned to find Jeremiah sitting near Sophia's feet. It didn't work, Lucia said. I still feel sad, and I don't want Mom to go. Jeremiah wrapped his arms around himself and looked up at Sophia. In that moment, Lucia knew how much he loved her mother. She could see it in the brightness of his eyes, the softness in his face, the stillness in his body. Jeremiah caught Lucia staring at him. He quickly stood up and ran off. Why did he leave without saying goodbye? He was protecting his heart, Lucia. He knew he had uncovered it just then. Most people are not willing to do that, other than the very young and the very old. A person has to be very brave or trusting, or understand a great deal. Lucia got down and put her hand in the river, feeling the water flowing through her fingers, tugging at her hand, making it feel alive. She wondered where the stick was and how long it would take before it got to the sea. So, again, that's something about desire. We think about kind of like this aggressive kind of going after desire, what we want or what we long for. But again, a sort of feminine way of approaching desire and the pain of desire and longing is that naming and letting go, and then following that desire with awareness and with attention and see where it goes, like the one character, Jeremiah, with the stick and the river, kind of watching it go. And then what happens is that you begin to understand what it is you truly desire. Because what we think we desire is often not our deepest desire. So, but by that sort of naming and then releasing and letting go, rather than trying to actively make it happen, there's not a place for that at times, but that deep distressing longing and desire, that unfulfilled, this is what I have found in terms of a kind of a sacred feminine healing way of approaching that, those very painful, unfulfilled desires or longings. I don't know how much. I think what I'll do is I'll end with this passage, and which is kind of a reflection of another character. What happens is that these characters in my book, which is kind of a cross between a novel and a tale, they're kind of archetypal characters, which is why the book is like a tale, because they're archetypal. And this is a timeless kind of tale. You don't know exactly what time period this is or where it is. So it's kind of an archetypal story, but it's also got that psychological truth that you see sometimes, you see in novel writing, you know. So it's kind of a combination. But each of the characters, the archetypal characters, are trying to, each has a different piece or a different understanding of the sacred feminine. And the book is about each of their journeys in terms of understanding the sacred feminine in each of their own unique ways. And then their relationship and how they come together. So, but anyway, and this is again the summing up of one of the major characters. This was sort of his writings. He has died, and this is his writings have been found, and this is something that he wrote that sort of got his discovery of the sacred feminine. You asked me to say more about unity, how it applies to human experience, which seems so diverse. I will begin with a basic and fairly common experience, and therefore one easily ignored. The experience of being one united self, a single unitary subject. This experience persists in a manner that defies reason. I think of the young boy I once was, how different that boy is from this older me. And yet, I believe the boy is me, and it was I who was that boy. And I have also observed that I have many aspects, many unknown parts, and even personalities that I have experienced at different times. I have said and done and felt things that surprise myself, and yet recognize these as myself. And finally, though I have such little knowledge or control of the workings of my body and all its aspects, some even say our bodies are a congregation of many living organisms, my experience is that this body is mine and not another's. When I first began observing these things, I was frightened for a brief time, and then I became curious. I have given much thought to these phenomena over the years and attempted to formulate an explanation for the durable and enduring unity and coherence that seems to be essential to the sense of self. I came to the conclusion that the self, perhaps because it is more fundamental or more encompassing than the mind, cannot be fully comprehended by it. While accepting this, I could not let my questions rest. I wondered if there might be another method I could use to investigate the nature of the self, a method not constrained by mental constructs. A solution came to me one morning when I was waking up. I simply needed to allow myself to become more aware of my experience. Over time, I discovered that the best way to train myself to do that was to sit quietly and observe whatever I was experiencing, to simply be a container for it, and only after a period of time to allow myself to reflect on it. I found that after years of practicing this, I could observe myself while I worked and met with others. I discovered that when I felt particularly intense emotions or a notable surge of vitality and remained still, allowing myself simply to become more aware of them, my inner experience was one of transformation or of seeing something I had no idea of previously. Paradoxically, these experiences strengthened simultaneously a sense of being an indivisible unity and of being completely permeable and open. These experiences and those I had observing my more typical emotional and vital states led me to two important questions. How are awareness and the sense of unity connected, and where is the self in this? For years I sat with these questions. Whatever I came up with, I would check against my experience. How many formulations had to be discarded as being unequal to experience? I am now at the point where I see these three, self, unity, and awareness, as fundamental, inseparable forces that are behind and directing human experience. But sense that behind these three and holding them together is a body of wisdom. It takes all my attention to contemplate such matters, and when I manage it, I sense how far I am from understanding and inhabiting even my own being. But how could I sense this if I did not in some way already know and inhabit? And so I am back to a question similar to the one I had when I was a young man in prison. Then I wondered how it was I could see so clearly my own stupidity and my lack of integrity. I came to the conclusion then that an intelligence I later called wisdom was nearer to me than my own self, that it was more myself than anything I had previously identified with. The conclusion was similar in this case also. My life is only fully understood and inhabited by wisdom, as is every life, and it is offered to me as being fully understood and inhabited as a continual gift. So that wisdom again is the sacred feminine. And again, just that openness to experience, the honoring experience, the kind of going inward so you're paying attention to what you're experiencing, those are all movements within the realm of the sacred feminine. So I don't know if people have any comment or questions at this time. Yes?
I was just curious at what age you knew you wanted to go into the monastery, and also when you were there, how you were able to express the emotions outwardly, like amongst the other women. how was that? Like, was that?
Okay. Well, the first question, I knew I wanted to go in the monastery at 16, and as to emotional expression. Probably it was a loving community, but there was not an openness or an understanding, an appreciation of emotional experience. Okay, so there was a religious life, a religious community, but it was like the culture. It was mentalized to a large extent. And so this discovery I made, for example, about the emotion and how to approach intense emotional experience, I learned on my own. It wasn't as if I had a guide there, you know, or some, you know, wise woman or spiritual director who helped me. I kind of stumbled in on my own. So the community was very human, and it was something that even though we were kind of apart, we still were struggling with the kind of like the mentalized and I call it the default position that we have, which is kind of living up here, you know. Although several of the nuns, I mean, they had this devotion to, but it was, some of the nuns were a kind of unsophisticated, very simple. Some had entered like me right after high school, or even before they left high school. So there was a range of nuns, but the life itself, because of the silence and stuff, they still hadn't figured out like what to do with intense emotional experience. And I would imagine they were frightened of it, just as, you know, as I was. I'm sure And it was the monastery Barbara and I were at was a very traditional monastery too. There are other monasteries, and even at the time, female monasteries that were more open, kind of like more embracing in terms of emotional experience, other ideas, other religions, etc., etc. So, but we lived in a kind of a more traditional monastic setting. I don't know if that's helpful.
That's kind of how I was picturing it.
Yeah.
So I was just thinking about the struggle of how when you were starting to realize that and how important that was, it just seemed difficult because, like you said, you just did it on your own.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't part of like the whole community.
No. Yeah. So loving, I felt very loving, loved and supported, but there wasn't that wisdom, I would say, about emotional experience.
Okay.
Anybody else? Questions or comments? Or if you want to share your own, just a little bit, briefly, your own little experience of the sacred feminine, or what draws you to the sacred feminine?
Well, yeah, I would share.
Mm-hmm.
So I also had a non-dual, I tend to call it
uh-huh.
a non-dual, I had an experience in my 20s that I was completely unprepared for and didn't understand at all, had no concept for it. And like you, I feel like it's been a lifetime of kind of letting it have its fullness
mm-hmm.
be
mm-hmm.
expressed. I don't think the mind ever understands
no.
what is beyond the mind's grasp.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the mystery that the mind can't understand. So just for me, it's been a challenge because it's like suddenly my whole perception of reality was just radically altered
mm-hmm.
and became different from most people in the world. And so it's how to navigate,
mm-hmm.
you know. So in those early years, I was grateful I did actually meet a teacher right around that time who really helped me kind of orient, you know, and just at least there was a circle where it could be shared
right.
somewhat, even though I was still trying to have any idea of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
So so it's just like in the East, these things are just part of their culture, you know. It's like they've known about these things for thousands of years, but I feel like in the West, we're still trying, like you've been talking about the mental aspect, we're
mm-hmm.
still trying to, in a way, find a way for this expression.
Mm-hmm.
And to feel okay about expressing these things and not to be thought of as crazy or
right.
whatever, you
right.
know?
Right.
So, and then having to just, even with teachers around, how it's such a solitary journey,
yes.
ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
It's our own, because all these things, like you're saying, the energy and the emotions and all these things that were happening, it just ultimately has to be dealt with within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, I just...
Yeah,
appreciate any
you.
Opportunity where we, you
mm-hmm.
know, as a community can share more of ourselves, you know, and give expression to this that is ultimately, for me it was the same, the that which has no name.
Right.
But I didn't understand it as the feminine so much as more the, well, in a sense you could say kind of the womb, the emptiness out
mm-hmm.
of which it
mm-hmm.
all arises.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I'm just kind of... getting to understand even what the divine feminine is really
yeah.
still, you
yeah.
know what I mean? And
yeah.
So it's like...
Because you can't pin it down.
Yeah,
It's so much.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways,
yeah.
I wanted to share something.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those things that bring us, like I said, to the sacred feminine are just things that are not valued by the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Receptivity is not necessarily valued by the culture. Productivity is.
Yes. Exactly.
Receptivity
That's
is not.
Right.
Being busy and making yourself important is valued and esteemed, but stillness is not.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Having something profound to say and saying it and is much more valued than silence. But those are the things that bring us into, like I said, the realm of the sacred feminine. And so, I do have a man I consider kind of like, actually he's like a soul father. I had that understanding shortly after I met him. His name's Robert Sardello, and he was very much inspired by Rudolf Steiner. I don't know how many of you have heard of Rudolf Steiner, but Rudolf Steiner I would say is like an esoteric kind of Christian,
mm-hmm.
and wonderful. I just love his writings, and Robert was inspired by him. Robert is really somebody who writes and speaks and lives from the sacred feminine, and you feel that when you're in his presence. So, but what I do have for you, if you would like, I do have books that I would recommend about the sacred feminine, and I also have my email. If you do read the book, or just after this, if you want to email me your feedback or your encounters with the sacred feminine, that would be great. So I have my information, the books I recommend, and I am doing, there's an event planned at the Sri, it's the Sri Aurobindo, it's an ashram in Lodi, California. It's about 2 hours from here, hour 45 minutes, 2 hours from here. I'm doing an event on working with stone. It's called Stone in the Triple Transformation. So It's about how the natural world, but particularly stone, can be our ally, our guide, in terms of the spiritual realms. So, but anyway, so I have this information if you want to pass it. So, I hope that you got what you kind of came for a little bit anyway today. And if is there any other comments or?
I just want to say that I greatly enjoyed your talk.
Oh, okay, thank you.
And have extracted some real gems from it that I'll be taking with me as well as you did.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming here tonight. And thanks again to Rob and Minnie Rivers, Books and Tea, for having me. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.